Fabric Belgique.
Get out, you noisy little kid.
Look out, Margate, and look up your daughters, eh?
Good morning, Peckham, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Jolly Boys podcast. We have a very special episode in store for you guys today. We decided to invite on special guest Zaggy to the show. Zaggy is the creator and founder of Only Fools and Horses Bricks and also a longtime fan of the show. Together, we discuss about how UK comedy played such a huge part in Zaggy's life growing up in Slovenia. We also talk about how Zaggy's anxiety is dramatically lowered through the creative process of Lego. And lastly, we touch on Zaggy's upcoming trip to the United Kingdom to meet Sir David Jason. I really love this chat with Zaggy. It's always good to meet a fellow fan with as much passion for the show as we have. So I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed making it. Give this superfan some love, give him a follow on his Twitter page, @FoolsBricks, and keep an eye out on his future creations. Enjoy the show. Zaggy, welcome to the Jolly Boys podcast. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been a while. We've been trying to get you on for quite a while, so I'm really glad that you're here today. People might be thinking, who on earth is Zaggy? So you're probably better known on Twitter as Only Fools and Bricks. And you're a guy who certainly knows his stuff when it comes to Only Fools and Horses, because you and I have been in contact for quite a while now, and we exchange information all the time about this, that, and the other, but you certainly know your stuff about the show. So it's going to be really, really interesting having you on. So welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you, Chris, for having me. I'm good. And basically I'm an Only Fools and Horses addict, if that is, you know, something appropriate to say. But yeah, thank you for having me. I'm doing good. Lovely jubbly and stuff like that. So yeah,
good to hear. Well, the first question I ask every guest who comes on the podcast, which is quite a big question, it could be quite a broad question, and it could be quite an in-depth question. So the question is, What does Only Fools and Horses mean to you?
Only Fools and Horses, well, basically, you know, Only Fools and Horses for me, it's like, you know, it's more than a show. It's like, you know, it's like family, you know, because the stuff that happens in Only Fools and Horses, you know, people tend to view it like just like some people tend to view it like a show. But for me, it's more personal. It's like a family, you know, it got me. I was just thinking about it some time ago. I was like, you know, everything in my life has changed, you know. But when I put the episode in, whichever episode it is from Only Fools and Horses, you know, it's always the same. You know, they're always there, you know. So it's really, really personal for me. And all them characters is alive for me. So, you know, it's a big part of my life. So I really, 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 really love it. You know, what can I say?
That's a really good in-depth answer. And I personally feel the exactly same way. And sometimes it is quite difficult to articulate your passion for such things, but I think you summed up really, really well. So you're not from the UK, you're actually from Slovenia. And that to me is a massive surprise that a UK comedy would be so, so big in your life when you don't live in the UK. So how did it come about? How did you find Only Fools and Horses? What is it about English comedy that you love? Is it just you personally who loves it? Or is it a massive community of people over there who appreciates UK comedy like us Brits?
It's about, you know, I don't know how I came about it. I don't remember the exact time, but it was just something, it's something relatable, you know. It's just like, it's the way we live. Well, a certain part of us lives here in our country. It was big. It was massive on television. I think it's still on television to this day, which is, you know, unbelievable. But I came about it, I don't know, on it was like a surprise to me. You know, I just watched it. I put it in because back in the day, we were getting, DVDs and stuff like that, you know, bootleg and, you know, Del Boy style. So I put it in, and since the first time I saw it, it was like just, it's on rerun constantly with me. Like, it's constantly, you know, I watch it with beginning to the end, and then I watch it again, you know what I mean? So You know, first time I saw it, it was just it was a big. But as far as Slovenia is about the community of Only Fools and Horses, everybody tends to know it. I can even tell you in Slovenian how it's how the show is named in Slovenian.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, listen to this. It's named Samo Bedaki in Konji. That's the exact, actually the exact translation to Only Fools and Horses, you know. And it was big. It still is big. Quite a lot of people know it. It's not as big as in the Balkan countries because Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, they're, you know, they're just crazy for it.
Yeah.
But here in Slovenia, you know, it was big. We even had a, which is fun, but it wasn't, but let's be honest, it wasn't that good. We had our own version. So yeah, that was kind of fun. And I watched that also. So, you know, it's just a massive, massive part of my life. And it's always been there and it always will be, you know, I tend to love it too much sometimes. Yeah.
That's never a bad thing. Going back to what you're saying about the own version of Only Fools and Horses in your country, the name of it, the translation of the name had quite a nice ring to it, but you saying it wasn't very good. So what was it about it which wasn't very good? And were they trying to recreate the stories one-to-one to the English version, or did they have their own take on it?
It was the name of the show in Slovenia was different than the translation. The name of the show in Slovenia was Brother to Brother, you know? That was the name of the show.
Okay.
They took the script from John Sullivan, because they got the copyrights, I think. They got the copyrights and they took the scripts from John Sullivan. It was basically, you know, just, you know, it was like, they did a lot of, if you know, if you're aware, they did a lot of versions across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Portuguese did, and there was a lot of versions that were Only Fools and Horses. Americans tried it, but that was just one episode. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I didn't, but I'm probably glad that I didn't.
Please don't, man. Just please don't. You know?
Do you know if it's on YouTube?
I don't know where it is, but I watched that episode actually, you know, which is full funny because they, oh my God, you know, it was just, you know, just don't touch it, you know.
So was it Big Brother?
What?
Nah, was it the first episode of Big Brother?
Yeah, in Slovenia, yes. We did the exact same episode. I think there were two seasons. And it probably ended across the second season. I know the part, you know, which episode, A Touch of Glass, is still in there in Slovenian version. But then it ended due to poor ratings, you know. But it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's bad from a certain point of view. But it's just when you look at the characters, I'll share some pictures with you on Twitter probably. And when you look at the characters, you know, like Trigger and, you know, they're just way off, you know, they're just way off, you know. So, but it was still a lot of fun.
It sounds really intriguing. A large part of me really wants to watch it because I'm sure I'd appreciate it. I'm a big fan of The Office, the UK Ricky Gervais Office. And I've been aware of the US version for a long time. And I deliberately avoided it just because I thought I can't bear to put myself through it. But during lockdown, I did start watching it. And because the appreciation I have for the English version and the first couple of seasons, or maybe the first season of the US one, is like for like. So it's a one-to-one recreation of what the English version was. And I really enjoyed it because I was a fan of the show. Obviously, it wasn't 100% perfect, but I quite like to see their interpretation of what we did and their own take on it. So yeah, a large part of me would like to see these other spin-offs of Only Fools and Horses created in other countries. But yeah, share some pictures with me and I'll tweet them out to our listeners just so they can kind of get an idea of what you're talking about when it comes to the characters and the casting. So going back to when you first started watching Only Fools and Horses, quite a regular occurrence on this podcast when we speak to guests, it's always their parents who introduced them to it. So do you remember any of your family members ever watching the show?
It was not like that for me. It was different for me, you know. It was my parents did watch the show and they know the show, you know. My dad is a big fan of A Touch of Frost with David Jason.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not introduced to Only Fools and Horses through my parents or something like that, you know.
Okay, that's interesting.
I was basically on my own, you know. look, before the fandom stuff I'm doing now and the creations I'm doing and being active on social media regarding Only Fools and Horses, I was just, you know, I was just in love with the show. You know, it's not like it's something new for me, you know, but I was always in love with the show. I didn't care about other stuff. I didn't care about the fandom and stuff like that. You know, I just, you know, I love the show. You know, I watch the show constantly. You know, it's the best comedy period for me ever. You know, it's just so relatable. And one thing I always, when I watch Only Fools and Horses, it doesn't matter which year it is. John Sullivan, with his script writing, was so ahead of his time. Because, you know, if you watch certain episodes, you know, it's the computer age is coming into effect. You know what I mean? The health foods are coming into effect, like and Mother Nature's Son. You know, it's always relatable to the times we're living in, which is amazing.
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's interesting that you kind of managed to discover it by yourself, because a lot of things we hear on this podcast is Only Fools and Horses reminds people a lot of their families, and it brings them that comfort. For instance, Only Fools and Horses reminds me of my grandparents, and I know other people who have spoken to on here just reminds them of being at their grandparents' house on a Sunday afternoon having a roast, and it all kind of brings back nostalgic memories. And sadly, you know, these loved ones have kind of passed on, so lots of fans do take comfort in that as well. And I think that's why the show is so special, because I'm not sure of any other shows out there where people can say that. I'm sure there maybe are one or two, but this is just something really comforting and homely about Only Fools and Horses, which just hold really happy memories for people. But moving on, I understand Mr. Bean is also another big comedy in your country. Why do you think that is? And do you think there's a connection between that and Only Fools and Horses? And are there any other comedies out there other than Mr. Bean, which are big in your country?
I think Mr. Bean, probably, to my knowledge, was the biggest UK comedy exported out of the UK. Probably. Because of the... you know, Mr. Bean is funny, but he doesn't have to use language, which is a big plus. I think that was, you know, and I always thought, before I got into the fandom stuff and made a lot of friends in the UK and stuff like that, I always thought Mr. Bean was bigger in the UK than it is, really. Well, Mr. Bean,
Sorry to interrupt. In the 90s, it was absolutely huge, but I think comedy has evolved such a long way, you know, thanks to Ricky Gervais. I think a lot of these bigger comedies now are more, in quotation marks, like mockumentaries, where a camera crew follow people around and it's all documented as life, and people do awkward looks to the camera and everything like that. So I just think the intelligence of comedy and the way comedy is delivered has changed. Although Mr. Bean here is still a massive classic. But it's crazy to think, isn't it, that Rowan Atkinson is such an animated actor. He could captivate such a wide audience and make the nation laugh by not saying anything.
Yes.
It's an incredible actor. But yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. What were you saying?
No. It's basically, I think it's just, you know, that's the point, you know, Mr. Bean. Because Mr. Bean, but I tend to, you know, I read about a lot of UK comedy. I love UK comedy. I think it's, you know, it's just brilliant. It's the best. It's simply hands down the best, you know, and take it from me, son, it is. Because, you know, it's just, you know, they have a lot of good comedy in the UK, and British humor is just different, you know.
Okay, so, without putting you on the spot too much, name me your five top UK comedies now.
Okay.
Obviously, I'll Only Fools and Horses, number one.
Yeah, I could go five times Only Fools and Horses if you want. But nah, I'll leave you. I'll go Only Fools and Horses, of course. I'll go, you know what, I'll go. I'm a really, really big fan of the Green Greengrass. It's so funny to me. Then I'll go, you know what, I'll go Waiting for God.
Okay, another series when Daniel Hill starred.
Daniel Hill is amazing, and shout out to Mr. Hill, because he's amazing.
Yeah, he's a lovely, he's a really, really nice, genuine guy. I love that. Yeah, he's very nice.
Yeah, he's amazing. I'll go that, and I'll go Citizen Smith. I love Citizen Smith. It's just that's John Sullivan is mm-hmm. Deno. I love yep. him. Yeah, it's just amazing. And I'll go five. I'll go something more recent, but it's not England. It's Irish. I'll go okay. Derry Girls. I love Derry Girls.
Okay, I've not actually seen Derry Girls, but
oh come on, man, you gotta see Derry Girls.
There's not enough time in the world, is there, to watch a lot of these things? But I do know one of the main actresses from that was in a period drama called Bridgerton, which took the world by storm. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but it was a lot of it was shot in a city called Bath, which is just a stone's throw yep. away from where I live. And I was lucky enough to be on the film set of the yep. first season back before the pandemic. But yeah, Derry Girls is something that's definitely Derry on my watch list. But
I'm going to have to watch it.
I definitely funny. Will watch it. I'm going to talk to you about some comedies now, and I want you to tell mm-hmm. me if you've seen them, if yeah. you like them, or if you don't like them. So I know you and I had a conversation just before we started recording about the UK Office, and I'm a huge, yeah. huge fan of that. It's definitely in my top five comedies. I think Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant got the characters so right, and their relationships, and the whole love story between Dawn and Tim is the biggest love story, in my opinion, since Romeo and Juliet. Tom, who did the podcast with me, who's sadly not here today, I remember once he kept on at me to watch The Office, and I thought it was going to be the most boring thing ever. I thought it's just going to be people sat around an office. To me, that wasn't comedy. For me, comedy was two brothers drop in priceless chandeliers, because I watched only Fools and Horses before that. Anyway, Tom showed me a few episodes of The Office, and I was absolutely captivated straight away, and I didn't think I was going to be, and I just cannot praise that comedy enough. But to my surprise, it's not a comedy you actually like, and I'm really surprised by that.
I don't like it. How can I describe this? It's the new age humor. It's a different kind of humor. It's not, you know, the old school humor was basically slapstick comedy, you know. Only yeah. Fools and Horses is based on slapstick comedy to a certain point, you know, mm-hmm. where something happens and it's funny, you know. That's why I liked, when I was younger, I liked Jim Carrey, and I liked, what is the guy who plays in The Black Sheep? Those are American comedies. Chris Farley and stuff like that, because that's okay. slapstick comedy. Mm-hmm. And The Office and you know, Parks and Recreation, and those are a type of comedies that are well established in the world, you know, specifically, and have a high praise. But I don't find that funny. It's not funny to me. It's okay. really quite simple.
Do you think yeah. it could be a comedy? It sounds like I'm really trying to force The Office on you now, but I'm not trying to force The Office on you. But
I won't watch The Office, please. I won't.
How many times have you seen it? And do you think you might revisit it in a couple of years' time and find a new appreciation for it? Or are you adamant it's not the comedy for you?
No, everything is possible, you know, but I tend to, you know, you know what the deal is with comedy. Comedy is really simple. Comedy has to be, you know, when you put something in to watch it, you know, it doesn't matter what mood you're in, it has to make you feel good to a certain point.
Yeah.
And it has to be liked. You know what I mean? It always has to be liked. Because for certain movies or dramas or, I don't know, different things, you have to be in the mood, you know? That's me. That's
yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's a very different comedy. Yeah. I guess Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant were certainly playing the long game when it yes. came to The Office, whereas John Sullivan, Only Fools and Horses, it was just yes. back, like boom, 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 wasn't it? Yes. Like jokes in yes. scripts and stuff like that. So I can fully appreciate what you're saying. Another comedy that I was going to ask you about is another older yes. comedy, and it's Some Mothers Do Have Them. Have you ever seen that with a character called Frank Spencer?
Which comedy are you referring to?
It's called Some Mothers Do Have Them.
No, I haven't seen that. To be okay. honest with you, I haven't seen that.
I'd love for you to watch it on my recommendation, and I'd really like to know what you think. So it's a comedy which is around the Only Fools and Horses series one sort of time, and it's very similar okay. comedy. I won't ruin it too much for you, but I'll say the links to everything. But I want you to watch it because I think that you might like it. And another big comedy for me that I really love is The Royal Family. Have you ever seen that?
I have.
I can tell by the look on your face you've seen it, but I'm a bit concerned to whether or not you're going to really, you can tell me you like it or you really don't like it. So come on, what's the verdict on the royal family?
My verdict is I don't like it. I'm honest, man. I'm just honest. No. You have to understand something. There are comedies. That's from my point of view. I appreciate everybody who likes everything, you know, but from my point of view, comedy has to be, look, if you take, for instance, Waiting for God, it's not that big of a comedy in the UK. It still is. It's top 50 or top 100. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But the writing is brilliant. And always the dynamic between two characters is I think it's Diane and I think it's Frank. Yeah, something like that. The dynamic between two characters, you know, that's the point, you know, because in Only Fools and Horses, it was slapstick comedy, let's say Only Fools and Horses, but still it was intelligent, you know, yeah. It was highly intelligent. Now, if you want something that is just like playing out, you know, dumb, you know, you have the American version, you have Married with Children. That's right. Just playing out. You know, that just playing out, you know, we're a, you know, sort of a family, and it goes all out, you know, it goes all the way, you know.
Okay.
So I tend not to prefer Royal Family. I'll put it like that, you know. I like, I forgot to say, I like the In-Betweeners.
I was literally about to ask you about the In-Betweeners because that's one of my favorite comedies. That's in my top five comedies of all time. And if you like the In-Betweeners, you should watch a show called Drifters, which I believe is by Bark Productions, which is Damien Beasley and Ian Hunt. I think I might have butchered that. I can't remember the names of the writers now. Yeah. But it's basically a female-driven cast of the In-Betweeners, and the actors who are in it actually appeared in the In-Betweeners movies. But I think it's the writing. What's her name? Jessica Knappett, her name is. And she's a writer, but she's a very competent writer. The stories are really, really funny. And I know lots of people won't watch it because it's a female-driven comedy, which I think is wrong. I think these things need to be given a chance. And I think it's on par with The In-Betweeners. And I've watched it so many times. But it's called Drifters. It's on. I don't know if you can you get all four on over where you are or Channel 4 player?
I can get everything.
Okay.
If you say it's a female version of The In-Betweeners, Derry Girls is the female version of The In-Betweeners also.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, okay. I definitely need to watch it. But yeah.
Full female cast. It's funny as, you know, it's really, really funny, really intelligent. And you know, one more, I'll give you one more recent comedy that is unfortunately will not get, you know, it will not get a new season. White Gold, James Buckley. And,
yes, I did see that. Ed, I can't remember his last name now, but I did see, because they're double glazing salesmen, aren't they?
Yes.
I did watch that.
Mickey Pierce type of stuff.
Yes. So I think we could dedicate a whole podcast exchanging comedies because there's so many good things. But I definitely recommend you watch Some Mothers Do Have Them as your old comedy and Drifters as a newer comedy, and let us know what you think. So I'm sure the listeners are probably either screaming at me going, those are rubbish, or screaming at me, they're good and you need to watch them. But the reason we've got you on this podcast is, despite you being a big fan and having knowledge about all sorts of things to do with Only Fools and Horses, you are on Twitter and Instagram, Only Fools and Bricks, because you're known for recreating one-to-one scenes from Only Fools and Horses in Lego pieces. And I've been following your work for an awful long time, and the things you create are absolutely fantastic. And I know you've got marvelous feedback on them. So tell us a little bit about what you do and what your end goal is, because from what I understand, you want to recreate one scene from every episode, from every series.
Yes. So basically, you know, it started off a little, you know, it was weird. It was, I'm a type of guy, since I was younger, since I was a kid, whenever I watched a movie or something I really liked, I wanted to play around with it, if you understand me, you know. I wanted to have like an action figure of stuff or, you know, something, you know.
Yeah.
And basically that was always my mindset. And when I got, you know, when I got into Lego, I don't know, it's 2 or 3 years ago. It's not that long ago.
Fairly recently, though. Fairly new passion for you. That's interesting. Yes. I presumed you'd been playing with Lego ever since you were a child.
Yes, I had Lego when I was a child, but then, you know, it was a big gap. You know, you do adult things and you're an adult and, you know, stuff mm-hmm. gets to you, stuff like that. You know, you do girls and, you know, other things, you know.
So, just tell the listeners how old you are.
I'm in my 30s. I don't discuss my age. I'm like a woman, but, you know, like Trigger said.
That's fair enough. Sorry to interrupt. I just thought it'd be important for our listeners to know how old you are, because, you know, when listening to podcasts, when there's no video, everyone's kind of trying to guess, you know, what the person looks like or how old the person is. But yeah, sorry, so carry on with your Lego passions.
So I got I'll be honest. Look, I got anxiety. I got a lot of anxiety. You know, I got And Lego helped me with anxiety to a certain extent, you know, because you follow the rules. I don't like rules in generally in life, but you follow the rules and you relax, you know. And I started, you know, I took my old Lego pieces I had, you know, I have some things from my childhood. And, you know, I was like, damn, I'll go buy myself a set, you know, and I bought a couple of sets, and I have a lot of sets now. We'll discuss that later. Then I was like, you know, Only Fools and Horses is my, you know, favorite show, and it's not recreated in Lego. You know, you don't have Only Fools and Horses in Lego. So I said, I'll do the Nelson Mandela flag. And I did it, you know, which is, and I'll give a little jab to the, you know, how I did the Nelson Mandela flag. I took the Friends official set. So yeah, that's the Friends show. I took that official set and I recreated it into Nelson Mandela House. I think it's much better.
Cool.
yeah, that's a little jab to the Friends fans.
So what did you do? Have Ross as Del Boy and Chandler as Marlene or something?
No, it was the official set is Central Perk. You know, it was a couple of years ago. It came out, you know, and I bought that set.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
Yeah, and then I basically, because I saw in it, I saw in it Nelson Mandela House, you know, I saw the flat and I said, I'll do that, you know, and I did it, you know, and then I posted it, you know, because I never posted before stuff, you know, before all this, I never posted stuff on social media. I'm not that type of guy. And I posted it. It was a lot of, you know, good reactions. Get that on, you know, Lego should make that. And a lot of people that are, let's say, in high places in the Only Fools and Horses community, you know, commented and said, you know, it's brilliant, blah, 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 and this and that, you know. And then I took like a year off. Yeah, a year, probably even more, you know. I did that and that was it, you know. So then I wanted to do something else and I did the next hit, you know. And after that, again, I got a lot of good feedback and stuff like that. And people were reaching out to me, basically. When I did the first figures, you know, people were reaching out to me privately, you know, do you sell them figures, you know, can I get that? And stuff like that. And I was like, man, you know, this could basically really lead to something, you know.
That reminds me, you still owe me some figures. Well, I've not forgotten. Because you and I spoke about, well, it must have been a year ago, on WhatsApp, yeah, during the pandemic, and I said I'd love some figures, but yeah, you've never delivered them. Just lie to me and say they're stuck in the post somewhere. then we can move on.
Nah, I'm winding you up. You know, I'm pulling your leg like Uncle Albert. I'll do the figures for you. I don't, you know, generally I don't. I'll say this once again, even here, I don't sell stuff, so I'm in no breach of no copyright. People tend to think so. Some people, I don't sell stuff. I give away stuff for charity, and I do stuff for people who are really close to me. And basically that's it. But other than that, I got my first reaction from Michael Fenton Stevens, the Groovy Gang, you know, Alan.
Yeah. Yep.
And when I got that reaction, it was like surreal to me. You know, he saw my figure, he saw my work. You know, that was courtesy of my friend Edwin, who sent him. He's good with him. And I was like, wow, this is amazing, you know. Basically took off from there, you know. It's a hell of a ride. Pardon the language, but yeah. So it is. It's kind of amazing, to be honest with you.
Well, yep. Yeah, like I said, your work is absolutely fantastic, and we love seeing it. Going back to the fact that you mentioned that they're not for sale, is that because for legal reasons or copyright reasons that you're unable to sell them? Because I'm pretty sure there's people who sell these sorts of things on the website Etsy all the time, and that perhaps they can get away with it. But do you actually know the logistics of being able to sell these Only Fools and Horses Lego figures?
To be quite honest with you, I know I've been taught about copyrights a lot. I know how copyrights go, but it's not about copyrights. It's about basically my appreciation and love for the show. I don't want to breach nothing. You know, it's
okay. That's fair enough. Yeah, just to be on the safe side. Yeah, that makes sense. And I thought that might be one of the reasons why. So, how far along are you with your goal of recreating one scene from every episode of Only Fools and Horses? Where are you up to, and how many have you got left?
Well, you know what I'm at. I'm in Video Nasty.
Oh, that's my worst episode, and I think you know that's my worst episode. Judging by the look on your face, I cannot stand that episode. It's funny. I was talking. Why?
Yes.
I think the script is really weak, and I think some of the reactions are pretty bad as well, which hurts my heart to say that because I'm a big fan of the show. I don't really like to say anything negative about it, but for me, it just doesn't. It's a script which doesn't seem to fit in with any of the others. But again, yesterday I tweeted about a scene from the Royal Flush. And that always sort of stirs the pot because lots of fans don't like that. And I can appreciate why they don't like it. But for me, it's an episode I don't mind at all. And I feel a bit guilty that I like the episode because so many fans don't like it, but I can sit down and watch it and I can take it for what it is. But funnily enough, I found a really interesting deleted scene from that episode yesterday that I'd never seen before, which you probably have, which isn't going to surprise me, but right. It's a scene where Del asks Albert to fetch the gun. The shotgun, the shooter,
yeah,
and Albert, sure. Albert waddles off to the van, sort of muttering under his breath about Dale sending him to do it, and he collects the gun out of the back, and it's, I don't know, it's like a 30-second scene, which they cut from the DVDs, and I don't believe it's aired either, but it's really interesting to see because it kind of shows you a different side of Buster Merrifield's character in it. But I do understand why it was cut, because it's a bit of an irrelevant scene, but it's still great to see, despite me not ever seeing it before.
You know, about Video Nasty. Video Nasty is a funny episode. It has a lot of funny scenes. I never thought about it as being weak. I understand that point of view, but it has a lot of funny, you know, especially the funny thing is, you know, I'll recreate the scene with Mickey Pierce, you know, and the Night Nurse take 3, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll do that. But other than that, about Royal Flush is, for me, if I had to pick one, I love every single episode. I'll make that clear. Every single episode, I think it's better than anything else ever on TV regarding comedy. Royal Flush for me is probably the worst episode, just because of Del Boy's character. He was off his character. That's not Del Boy.
Yeah, this is why the fans aren't so keen on it. I appreciate that, and I can see that, but I still find the episode really entertaining. But going back to Video Nasty, I guess the one positive about it is you get to see Patrick Murray a lot in it, and he's such a good character. Yeah. In our previous episode, Healthy Competition, we kind of broke his character down a lot, and he's such an integral character to the show. So that's one good thing that Video Nasty has got going for it. So going back to your Lego creations, so you're currently working on Video Nasty now, or have you just finished Video Nasty?
No, I'm working on it now. I was quite busy in the past couple of days, been doing something for Mrs. Bernard, Nervous. I'll do the scene probably today or tomorrow. I'll do it. So yeah, it's out. I usually post on Sundays, even though people's what I read is not good for social media, but I think it's more, you know, because Sundays were the day where Only Fools and Horses, the family gathered together and, you know, they watched it. That's the tradition, you know, in the UK at least, you know.
Yeah.
So I tend to put him out on Sunday. I'll do it on Sunday.
Okay.
A big shout out to Patrick Murray, because Patrick Murray is a really great guy. So yeah. and okay. I love Mickey Beer.
Well, it sounds really exciting, the work you've got going on with Andrew Bernard, and we will get to that quickly. Sorry, we'll go back to that later on in the podcast. But going back on topic with your Lego, so you're currently working on Video Nasty now, so you've got quite a few episodes left to do. So how long do these recreations and artworks take you from start to finish?
It depends, you know. The reason why I'm able to do it, probably because I have a lot of sets. I have a lot of Lego because, you know, there are different outfits and different situations. You know what I mean? But it tends to take me, I don't know, if I get the stuff right, I don't know, a couple of hours. You know, I get different shots and then I delete shots and I, you know, enhance shots. And it's a process. You know, sometimes it tends to stress you out. But It gets there, you know. You know what I mean? It depends on the, basically on the scene, you know what I mean? But altogether 46 episodes, that's 46 weeks, you know. So we'll see what we'll do later that's finished.
What will you do at the end? It'd be really emotional for you to do the last episode. You'll feel lost. You'd be like, what am I gonna do with myself now? You'd have to start doing each episode of the Green Grass. Or in-betweeners. In-betweeners would be cool, but I don't know if there's anything significant enough in the in-betweeners for your pieces to stand out.
It is. Come on, man. They got the yellow car, you know, the small car and falls into the lake.
Yeah. You could do a scene of Simon stood at Thorpe Park holding the door of his yellow car. You and I are friends on Facebook, and I have noticed you have visited Legoland, because that was one of the questions that I was going to ask
you. I do.
Tell me about that. Was it your dream come true?
I had an Only Fools and Horses hat on.
I did pick up on that. Don't worry, I picked up on it. I was about to mention it, but you beat me to it.
You forgot to mention that. I don't know, Legoland I visited with my now former girlfriend. It was like 2 or 3 years ago, you know. It was a good experience for me because I was just starting to get back into Lego. I visited Legoland in Germany. I was starting to get back into Lego, and I was, you know, fully in it, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I went to. It was a good experience. It was really nice. It had a lot of good stuff to see. You know what I mean? But you know, other than that, I tend to like to travel. Never been to the UK, but I'm coming.
That was going to be one of my questions moving forward. But going back to Lego, I love the idea of Lego. I remember when I was younger going into these toy shops and seeing the boxes of this Lego, and someone who obviously knows what they're doing in regards to stylizing the Lego had made these sets up and photographed them and put them on the front of the box. And I was always fascinated by the pirate Lego, the pirate themed Lego. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that looks so cool. And I think I plagued my parents for a box for Christmas once, and I got it out of the box and I tried to build it and make it look like it did on the front of the box, and it looked nothing like it. And I was just really disappointed. I think I was more of a practical child growing up. I used to like playing with action men in dinosaurs. Yeah. But I guess the beauty and the creativity of working with Lego is the satisfaction of building it and not necessarily playing with it. And back when I was younger, I didn't understand that, just because I wanted a dinosaur to sort of break through the Lego, or I want the pirate ship to move along water, but it just never happened. But in my older years, I have had some experience with Lego. So for the listeners who may or may not know, when I'm not talking about Only Fools and Horses, I go around taking photographs for the camera. So I'm a professional photographer. And about 5 years ago, I was hired by Legoland Windsor to travel there for a few days to photograph a book for them. And at this point, I'd never been to Legoland before, because Lego wasn't something really on my radar, and it's not somewhere that I would have liked to have gone. But I arrived there on, I think it was a November, a cold November morning, and I had the whole place to myself because it's seasonal. It's not open all year round. And I had the whole park to myself, and I had the best day walking around, taking photographs of several different attractions in the model village. I believe they probably got a model village in every branch. And it's just absolutely amazing, the attention to detail. And also, did you see there was a Legoland documentary that went out on British TV, I think it must have been about 2 years ago. It was inside the park, and it was the intricacies of how the resorts are ran. But it's really fascinating.
I saw it, you know what the deal is with Lego? The deal is that, you know, they tend to spark your creativity, you know. I think we as people, everything that is around us, we create it to a certain extent, you know.
Yeah.
And I think people need creativity, you know. It's really simple, and it's a good thing when you can be alone with yourself, you know, and just, you know, if you have different types of people, you know, some tend to do, you know, mocks, which is my own creations, and tend to go off, you know, doing stuff the way they want to. Some just follow the rules, you know. You have a little booklet with instructions, and you create something, you know, which is a good feeling, you know. And about the Legoland stuff, it's really, really amazing to see all them creations that are possible, you know, with small bricks, you know what I mean? So yeah.
Well, the biggest question is, how much money did you spend in the gift shop?
I bought, you know what I bought? Me and my girlfriend at the time we bought a couple of sets. One was for her and one was for me. It was not that much, you know, but I wanted to something from to have as a memory. So I got a magnet. I collect magnets, you know, when you put them on the fridge, you know,
yeah.
So wherever you are. And I got a magnet for Legoland, you know, so that's a good thing. But it was a great experience.
It's strange, isn't it? Some of these cult followers of Lego will pay crazy amounts of money for Lego merchandise. Yeah. I remember I've got a friend called Karen who absolutely loves Lego, and she bought back some sort of big Lego head. I don't know if it's like a cookie jar. Mm-hmm. You might be aware, but it must have cost at least like £80 or something. But I remember she was really proud of it. And I think it's quite difficult to get. But going back to when I worked at Legoland, it was a bit naughty, actually. I went back on the first day of the opening season. So all the staff were back in, the gift shop was open, whereas my first day it wasn't. And I remember at the end of the day, I was just about to go back. I got loads of stuff from the gift shop, got loads of key rings, t-shirts and hats and stuff like that. And really cheekily of me, I added it onto my bill at the end of the day. So I ended up charging Legoland for their own merchandise. And I still got those key rings on my keys to my studio today. But this is another interesting thing about Lego, which I always find fascinating, because like you, there are so many passionate people out there who absolutely love it. But are you aware of the lost shipping container, which I don't know if the boat capsized or if a whole crate of Lego somehow managed to fall into the sea? And there's a specific beach down in Cornwall where these avid Lego collectors go, and they walk up and down the beach all day, sometimes all day, every day, to try and find a piece of this washed up Lego because it's so prestigious and so special. Really? This must have happened, I don't know, almost 10 years ago, but these pieces of Lego are still washing up. But finding a piece of Lego is like, I don't know, someone finding a diamond. Do you know what I mean? What I mean? It's only a piece of plastic, but the significance of it, the journey, how it's, I don't know where this shipping container capsized or whatever, but are you aware of this?
Not aware particularly of that story, but regarding to probably Uncle Albert was driving that ship or something like that.
He could have been. That's a good point.
But regarding the Lego is Lego is unbelievably expensive. You have to understand something. It never was cheap. It's unbelievably expensive. Mm-hmm. And in these days now, people tend to be, they call them resellers. People tend to buy Lego like they buy gold, because the value of Lego is always going up.
Yeah.
So you know, it's a big, big business. You know, Lego is a multi-billion, I don't know, euro, whatever you want to
pound. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Plus, people are making serious amount of money reselling Lego. I don't do that. I'm a collector.
Yeah.
I have around 200 sets, you know, but I just put them. It's a weird thing, you know, because it's the point of the hunt. You know, you tend to get something, then you create it and you just put it on display, and that's it, you know.
Yeah. Going back to this Lego documentary I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, there was a section on it where they were following people who wanted to become Lego artists or Lego builders. I don't know what the exact title of the role was, but it was their journey from the interview process to if they actually got the job, then watching them construct ideas and work out pieces for Lego to sell or for Lego to host in their theme parks. If the position came up for you to become a professional Lego builder in one of their Legoland resorts, would you be interested in taking up that position?
To be quite honest with you, not. Because, you know, Lego is, for me, it's just a way to recreate Only Fools and Horses. That's where my love lies, in Only Fools and Horses. Not in Lego as much. Lego is a hobby for me. I love it. I love the creation. I had my dark times in Lego also. But to be quite honest with you, I had a position. That's how the whole thing started. It's a really funny story. I had a job proposition from the Lego store here in Slovenia. And basically, it was between that or between me going full and into making my own creations in Only Fools and Horses fandom, you know, with Lego. And basically, that job was sort of promised to me to a certain extent, because I was, because I'm really good with them, was past tense. And, you know, when I went to the interview, you know, and I was like, yo, it was all right. You know, I even did a little video for them, for the, you know, for them to see and stuff like that. And basically, then after a couple of weeks, I got a response that I haven't been picked for the job, you know, and that started this whole thing. So that's basically how I'm here speaking with you now, which is interesting. You know? So.
Wow, that's a very interesting story. That is interesting. Yeah. So you have got a very special piece which is coming up, which is going to be a recreation from the fan favorite episode, The Jolly Boys Outing. And am I right by thinking you're trying to start some sort of campaign where if it gets X amount of signatures, well, let's start back to how this works. So if you want Lego to pick up on your idea, the process you need to go through is get X amount of signatures by people or fans of the product that you're making, then Lego will consider it.
Yes, basically it's quite a simple process, but it's kind of, it's Lego ideas. It's a process. I think Only Fools and Horses, it's really simple. Only Fools and Horses deserve to be in a Lego form officially. That's really simple. And there were some tries. People tried it before, and probably the most, because you need 10,000 votes in a period of 2 years. So basically, you need 10,000 votes from people. Then Lego considers making it official product. You know what I mean? If they could get the rights from BBC, which probably they could, because they're, you know, if they wanted to.
They've got the money. Yeah, of course.
Yes. But the only thing that's kind of, you know, holding me back to a certain extent is that the Only Fools and Horses are big, unbelievably big in the UK and other countries, but not America. And, you know, because America is a big, big market for, you know, votes and stuff like that. You know what I mean? But I think Only Fools and Horses deserve. And what would be better than you go in every Lego store in the world and have a Jolly Boys bus to buy?
Yeah, that would be incredible. I'd love to own that. So, yeah. When does this website exist, or does this petition exist yet for your Jolly Boys Lego set?
No, it doesn't exist yet, because the deal was I submitted with just the bus and the 12 main Jolly Boys, you know. Mm-hmm. It was Lego said, Lego Ideas said that basically there were too many minifigures in regarding to how big the project is, you know. So then I was like, you know, I was a little bit disappointed, you know, and I was like, because I can, you know, who am I supposed to take off? You know what I mean? I won't take off any of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Harry, Denzel, you know, Del Boy,
yeah, Uncle Albert. Fans aren't going to want the set unless it's a complete set, because fans of the show will know people are missing. Therefore, it's a pointless purchase, isn't it?
Of course, you know, but I understand that point, you know, so they basically declined it. They didn't, you know, block it or something like that. They just said, you know, you should, you know, add more stuff to your project, you know, and basically then what I did, I recreated the Dreamland Margate, you know, I recreated the famous Mary Rose, you know, when you see in the Jolly Boys, you know, when the boy's eating his ice cream, you know, and the donut falls off, you know. And I did that. I did the ice cream stand, and I did the Uncle Albert, you know, when the boat, when he's driving the little boat, you know, and it hits the, you know.
Hits the iceberg, yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. So I did all that. I still haven't submitted it because basically maybe I'm to a certain extent, maybe I'm a little bit afraid that they will keep complicating things, you know, to be quite honest with you. But when I will, I'll let you know, you know. But this is all basically for the fans, you know. I just think Only Fools and Horses deserve to be Lego-fied officially like they're supposed to, and everybody can get a nice little bit display piece for Jolly Boys, you know, put it in your, you know, and just enjoy the figures and enjoy it, you know, just, you know, I think it's a beautiful thing.
So well, I think you should keep up the great work, carry on with what you do. And I'm sure ourselves included and the rest of the Twitter community will do everything they can to try and get 10,000 signatures on whatever it is you decide to finalize and put forward to Lego.
Yeah.
I did have an idea actually, but I guess it's going to be work on the same premise as, you know, you're not going to be able to technically use what you create commercially, but how cool would it be to have some professional photographer come in, not me, I'm just saying, as come in and take really nice photographs of each one of your recreations and then print a coffee table book. How amazing would that be? A Lego Only Fools and Horses book, like a coffee table book for people to have at home on their bookshelf or to have at home on their coffee table as a novelty item. I can imagine so many shops selling that. And maybe that could be your way to become a millionaire quicker rather than possibly going down all these routes of Lego. Just build the sets, get someone to photograph them, or maybe you can learn to photograph them well. Get them printed into a book and try selling the book, because I'm sure loads of publishers would want to pick that up.
That's a good idea, Chris. You know, but there are two things that are problematic. One thing that is problematic is Lego and their copyrights. You know, they tend to be very specific about their minifigures, you know, because minifigure is copyrighted minifigures. They can't copyright blocks, you know, bricks, but they copyright minifigures. You can get around that. It is a way, because people do a lot of stuff. The other thing is, you know, there's the BBC, you know, but that's a good idea. I got a lot of, I've been offered, you know, to do them like, it's a similar idea, you know, to do them like in a comic book, you know, so that will be, you know, so there's a lot of ideas, you know, but one thing about me is if I tend to go in for the money, then I lose the love. It's really simple, you know. So
I know what you mean. And obviously you don't want to ruin a good thing, but that's definitely the route I go down. And if I saw an Only Fools and Horses themed Lego book, I'd buy it in a blink of an eye, just because it's such an iconic, quirky thing to have. And it's something that you don't expect to see. And like I said, I can imagine so many different shops selling it, and it'd be that sort of thing people buy for presents for people all the time. It's a really, really great idea. So going back, you mentioned about currently working with Andre Bernard on a charity project. So tell me and the listeners a little bit more about that.
Basically, there's my brother from another mother, Edwin. A shout out to him, and shout out to my sister from another mother also, Rhonda. They basically do charity auctions for people who are attached to Only Fools and Horses. Like in the past, there was John Chalice, and there was Sue Holderness, and there was Patrick Murray and Daniel Hill and, you know, Michael Fenton Stevens, even before me. There were a lot of guys they did charities for, and they raised a lot of amount of money for certain charities, these Only Fools and Horses cast members, you know, support, which is a beautiful thing. And basically, now we are conversations about doing one with Andre Bernard, in May. Hopefully that gets through, you know, and I help. My point is I help with, you know, lots. I put stuff in, you know, for charity. So it goes to a good cause, you know. Hopefully we can do that, you know. So, but yeah, I recreated Andre Benacci. Doesn't know yet. I'll tell her that I recreate. I have a gift for her. So yeah, that's
lovely.
Basically
that's really exciting. And you know, yes, doing charity work is always an honorable thing. So when you say you donate stuff yourself for the charity, are you talking about donating your Lego pieces?
Yes. Yes, I donated Inge from the to Hull and back, you know, the big ship. I donated a couple of displays. I did a display for Daniel Hill and when he punches Rodney and stuff like that. You know? So there's a lot of stuff, you know, I donated.
That's amazing. So where can our listeners bid on these items? Is there a specific website they can go to see all these things that are for sale?
It's a new website now. It's going to be on it's on Facebook. It's Only Fools and Horses social group now it's called.
Okay, so, perhaps I can tweet the link out for the fans because they might be interested in getting their hands on some of your amazing Lego pieces.
Yeah. Because it's a really good thing for charity. I think it's just amazing, you know. So I'll leave the link for the new auction. It's going to be in May, I think. So, yeah.
May. Okay, brilliant. Okay, well, I'll make sure I tweet that out to the listeners. So earlier on in the episode, you said you'd never visited England, but you are hoping to visit soon.
I'm hoping to be there soon now that, this stuff with Corona is, you know, the virus is, you know, calming down. You know, I'm hoping to be in the UK. So it's a weird thing. I haven't been to the UK. You know, that's really actually quite weird. But
have you got an umbrella? Have you got an umbrella?
Yeah. But, you know, I'll give you a fun fact about my country. We have more rain here than you have. So it's a fun country.
Oh, it'd be like a summer holiday for you here then.
Yes. But I'm really looking forward to coming to the UK. You know, I want to see all the Only Fools and Horses stuff, what I can. And, you know, it's just, you know.
Well, maybe I can meet you in Bristol and I can give you a guided tour of where several things were filmed.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. Yeah. I'll come to UK a couple of times, but just now I'm starting to, you know, just to be there the first time, you know what I mean? Just, you know. But yeah. I'll come more times, you know. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of friends there now, so you know, a lot of Only Fools and Horses friends, and it's a really nice thing.
From what I understand, you were lucky enough to own a golden ticket to go and meet Sir David Jason in the upcoming Only Fools and Horses convention. Is that true?
That's supposedly be true. That is supposedly true. So yeah. Hopefully I can make that and I'll meet the guy himself. So yeah, that could be amazing.
So what's the date of the convention? Remind me and the listeners.
I think the day of the convention is the end of May, something like that. It was gifted to me by my friends, Edwin and Rhonda, and I hope I'll make it. We shall see.
Well, have you got anything planned to say to Sir David Jason when you meet him?
I have some plans for some certain things, but I'll tend to keep it a surprise.
Okay, well, yeah, we look forward to hearing what those are. Well, hopefully you do make it over to England because as much as a rainy, wet and miserable place it is, for an Only Fools and Horses fan to be able to walk around the streets and see where lots of the iconic scenes were filmed is incredible. And
it's just like I'm coming home, Chris, so, you know.
Well, make sure you tweet us loads of pictures of your endeavours when you're in England, because I'd love to see what locations you get round to visiting.
Of course, I will. I always will. You know, it's all love. I you know, for me, it's quite simple. It's Only Fools and Horses. Everybody who loves Only Fools, I love him to a certain extent. So, you know, it's all love. I'll share the love always.
Lovely to hear. Right, I'm going to give you a quick fire round of questions. Answer them as quickly as you can. Are you ready?
Nah, I'm not. But yeah, you can.
Okay, first question. What's your favorite Only Fools and Horses episode?
Yuppie Love.
That is a great answer. That is a fantastic episode. Tom and I both really love that series and love that episode. Okay, who's your favorite character?
All of them.
Okay, third question. Who's your favorite one-off character?
Favorite one-off character, it has to be the one, the only, the Shadow.
Oh, Vaz, yeah. Everybody knows The Longest Night is my favorite episode.
My favorite one-off character. In the Balkans, I'll tell you one thing. In the Balkans, I did a poll. In the Balkans, the favorite one-off character is Gary.
Right.
In the UK, it's between Tony Angelino and The Shadow.
It's interesting.
But Tony Angelino tends to come out on top. But for me, it's The Shadow. It's, you know, he's just amazing.
Yeah, Baz is a great guy. Our interview we did with him was just so...
I love that interview.
So eye-opening. He was such a great guy to chat to. And so in-depth in his memories and knowledge of what it was like to work on the show. And for me, it was a big surprise. Well, I don't know why it was a big surprise, but how professional it all was and how professional the rehearsals were. But, you know, back then it was one of the biggest comedies, or the biggest comedy for the BBC. So I'm not surprised. But like you, I don't like to think of them as actors. I like to think of them as real people in real situations. So for me, hearing what it was like for them to rehearse the scenes kind of breaks my heart a little bit and kind of like makes me question the episode. But it was so good listening to Vaz talk about it. Okay, well, it was really, really good talking to you.
Yeah, and to you, Chris. You know, it was lovely, jubbly, as Del Boy would say, or I don't know.
And
I have one question for you.
Go on, then.
I'll hit you one question. It's a simple question, though.
Hang on a second. Is this going to be about what episode was Lego mentioned on Only Fools and Horses?
No, we're going straight away. I think we talked about Lego enough. We'll go Only Fools and Horses.
Okay, go on then.
Okay. Tell me who played in more episodes. Was it Cassandra or Raquel?
Well, that's a good question, and probably not the best question to ask me because I'm not a fan of the later episodes of Only Fools and Horses, but I'm going to say probably Cassandra.
Cassandra played in one more episode than Raquel. Yeah, that's true.
Is that right? One more episode?
Yeah, she played in 21 episodes and Raquel played in 20. Or Gwen Strong and Tessa Peake Jones, if you want to put it.
Oh, that's really interesting. So I didn't know that. Yeah. Just one more episode extra. That's incredible. But it's good knowledge. It's interesting factoid to know, isn't it?
Yes. I was thinking Raquel played in more episodes. I don't know why I had that in my mind, but it was.
Well, I guess she's more of a prominent character, isn't she? Because she's Del Boy's significant other, in quotation marks. So, and I think she's kind of more of a more powerful character as well, isn't she? So she kind of stands out more, whereas Cassandra's a bit more timid and relaxed and more suited to Rodney, whereas Raquel needs to be powerful to kind of like rein Del in a little bit and calm him down and ground him and try not to let him run away with his ideas. But no, that's a really interesting fact that I wasn't aware of that, and that was a lucky guess.
But she was an actress, you know, that's my problem.
And that. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast, and please keep us updated with your creations. And as soon as you have anything you need signatures for, we'll be there to help support you. And enjoy your time in England.
And thank you.
Let us know what you say to David Jason when you get to meet him.
Yes, I will. I will. If I get, it will be lovely, jubbly. And thank you for having me, guys. Jolly Boys podcast. And, you know, thank you, Chris. And bonjour.
Bonjour for now.
We got some half-price crack dice and miles of carpet tiles. TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LPs. Ball games, gold chains, what's her names, and Ella Brooks. From Trevor Francis, track suits from a merchant shepherd's bush.